This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Celebrate Eid al-Adha, Feast of Sacrifice, in the Saudi holy city of Mecca. Violence in Paris as French police clash with protesters, angry at the fatal shooting of a teenager by a police officer. In Nicaragua, lodges a complaint to the UN over the U.S. refusal to pay damages for backing a guerrilla movement during the Reagan administration. Thanks for joining us. Muslims on Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia mark Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice, by offering prayers in the Grand Mosque of the Holy City of Mecca. The occasion is also being marked in Afghanistan, Syria, and Palestine, among other places. Muslims in other countries, including Iran, will be celebrating Eid al-Adha on Thursday. The Feast of Sacrifice is the second major Muslim holiday in the Islamic calendar. On this day, people greet their relatives and friends while enjoying festive meals. Those who can afford sacrifice an animal to commemorate Prophet Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his only son, Ismail, upon a command from God the Almighty. Abraham was exempted from performing the command and was offered a ram to sacrifice instead. Day 3 of the Hajj rituals has begun in Saudi Arabia, where over 2.5 million Muslims from around the globe have converged to perform the religious rites. Pilgrims took part in a symbolic stoning of the devil as part of the religious event. They will then return to Mecca to pray at the Grand Mosque. During Hajj, pilgrims do a series of rites, including circumambulation of the Kaaba. The end of the Hajj coincides with Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice, also celebrated by Muslims elsewhere. Hajj is one of the five pillars of Islam. It must be undertaken by every Muslim at least once in their lifetime, as long as they are healthy enough and have the means to do so. وزكريا إذ نادى ربه ربي لا تذرني فردا. As we mentioned, this is the pinnacle of this Hajj pilgrimage, of which it's day 3. As we mentioned to you, the part that is important about this day is the stoning of the devil, which is part of the religious event that's taking place, of which the pilgrims will then return to Mecca to pray at the Grand Mosque. Some of the rituals that involve in this, which is amongst the series of rites, includes the circumambulation of Kaaba, and the stoning of the devil, as I mentioned, is one of the most important aspects of this pilgrimage, which has reached a climax. And the numbers speak for themselves, and as it was reported, more than 2.5 million people reportedly have attended and have made this journey, of which every Muslim is required to do at least once in a lifetime, if possible. Clashes have erupted between French police and protesters who are angry at the fatal shooting of a teenager by an officer in the suburb of the capital, Paris. Footage showed vehicles burning and riot police gathering along several streets in Nanterre. The
Police in Paris say that they are mobilizing troops in the anticipation of more violence. On Tuesday night, police clashed with protesters angry at the death of a 17-year-old boy in the suburbs of Paris. He was fatally shot in Nanterre earlier that day. According to the local prosecutor's office, the teenager failed to comply with an order to stop his car. But a video shows two cops leaning on the car and an officer firing at the driver as the vehicle pulls away. The officer has been arrested on the suspicion of manslaughter, but he has not been charged yet. In the meantime, President Emmanuel Macron has described the incident as, quote, inexplicable and inexcusable.
I would like to express the emotion of the entire nation at what has happened and the death of young Nail. We have a teenager who has been killed. It's inexplicable and inexcusable.
Macron also pledged justice for the victim and called for calm as the country is bracing for more angry protests. In the meantime, a number of celebrities and politicians have expressed outrage and have drawn a parallel between the brutality of French and U.S. police. Numerous protest rallies and clashes have taken place in France in recent months, mostly over the economic crisis and a contentious pension reform. We were earlier joined by geopolitical analyst Jeff Brown from Normandy to talk about recent fatal shooting of a teenager by a French police officer.
What we're seeing happening in France is the inevitable result of capitalism, you know, reaching its culminating point. I remember reading George Orwell's book, Burmese Days, and in that book, he was in Burma, he was a cop in Burma, and he talked about how the fascism and the totalitarianism of colonialism overseas will ultimately come back to the homeland and to the home country, be it Britain or France. And that's what we're seeing. This is just a complete, it's so predictable, the violence and the brutality that we are experiencing here in the West, the United States. They can now gun down people indiscriminately, the cops can. And France is always about 10 or 20 years behind the United States. And the cops now here are not only just beating people, they're now starting to shoot people indiscriminately. And it will just get worse and worse. Macron, the president of France, has already told the police, you know, be as brutal as you need to be to make sure that these protests don't spread. So when you're losing fingers and hands and arms and eyes and having your brain damaged from rubber bullets, it's a big incentive not to go out, you know, day after day and protest.
Nicaragua has filed a complaint with the UN against the U.S. for its refusal to comply with a ruling by the International Court of Justice.
I challenge U.S. officials who hurl thousands of accusations at us, make statements in organizations that they dominate, statements where they defame us, slander us. I challenge them to take us to the court so that they can accuse us in the Court of The Hague.
President Ortega says that his country will go to court to demand the U.S. pay the damage it had done to Nicaraguans. In a letter to the U.N. chief, the Nicaraguan Foreign Ministry said that there is a historical debt the U.S. has not settled, despite an international court ruling over 30 years ago. The ICJ had ordered the U.S. to compensate Managua for its support of the Contras, the guerrilla movement during the administration of President Ronald Reagan. Following the judgment, the U.S. withdrew from the ICJ. Nicaragua and the U.S. have been experiencing sour relations over a host of issues, including Washington's sanctions on the country's key figures. New U.S. federal reports show more than $200 billion in COVID-19 relief loans and grants have been distributed to potentially fraudulent actors. The U.S. Small Business Administration says the total amount the agency disbursed was $1.2 trillion through two COVID relief programs during the pandemic. The programs were aimed at helping struggling small businesses deal with the harsh economic climate during the pandemic. The report also shows almost 90% of the fraud occurred in the first 9 months of the pandemic, during Donald Trump's administration in 2020. To date, only $30 billion of the estimated amount has been seized or returned to the U.S. Treasury. Rami Mazzari joins us from Chicago. Tell us more about this. Well, Rami, tell us the extent of the fraud that's occurred here, which seems to be pretty apparent.
Hi, Kaveh. Yes, this has been an ongoing story in the United States, and it's really quite revealing. You know, fraud is just an unfortunate fact of life, and it's expected in the U.S. that 5% is the standard amount of fraud in any business organization. But the latest report indicates that a whopping 17% of the COVID relief fund was stolen by fraud. And it really keeps going up. Every few months we get a story like this. The last time it was 10%, but now it's up to 17%. So we're talking about 3.5 times the normal amount of fraud. In actual numbers, like you mentioned, we're talking about $200 billion of the $1.2 trillion. It was called the Paycheck Protection Program. And this really, you know, this episode really says a lot about the United States. First of all, when you have a neoliberal democracy, it's predicated on having as little governmental oversight as possible. This, of course, allows the rich 1% to get away with fraud, to get away with not paying their share of taxes. So it's natural that fraud is going to be higher in a Western liberal government because there's fewer governmental workers overseeing the laws of the people. So the problem here is obviously, fundamentally, a lack of oversight. But a lack of oversight is what Western liberal democracies, whether Republican or monarchical, that's what they want. And because they want small government, it also means bad, inexperienced government. You know, the U.S. has had so much fraud here because they don't have a large group of government workers who were in place and ready to deal with a crisis, in this case, a epidemic. So, you know, rather than have this government, this large unionized, you know, group of workers in place, governmental workers, the U.S. elite just threw money at the epidemic. And why? Because they only had to release money one time, and then it's back to the dog-eat-dog mentality of liberal capitalism. Secondly, it shows that the U.S. has really hardly progressed from its famous Wild West mentality, where anything goes and rampant individualism is encouraged. You know, I mean, few people care more about themselves only and not the good of society than criminals. And that's why crime is rampant in the United States. I mean, the first law of any government of any type is to provide security. And everybody knows that the U.S. totally fails in this regard. Thirdly, crime is often the result of poverty and desperation. And despite being the richest country in the world, poverty and desperation here are at third world levels. There is so little governmental help that, you know, during this one time when the U.S. finally succumbed to the idea that the government should play a positive role, should shepherd their people away from poverty and hardship, People knew that this was so rare that they rushed to take advantage of it. They desperately needed this help, and they instinctively knew that this was a one-time opportunity. And as expected, the U.S. has now almost totally pulled back on the very important, very helpful coronavirus assistance programs. And now we're seeing in the U.S. that evictions are back to pre-pandemic levels. Student debt is about to become a major factor on why the U.S. is going to head into a recession. Food bank usage is soaring. So for the working poor class, these assistance programs are common in other countries, but it was just something rare. And then, you know, it's been pulled back now here in the U.S. Lastly, it's a case of poor leadership, because to apply for a paycheck protection loan, you had to be a small business owner or a corporation or a independent contractor, as they say. So this is not something which the average worker could apply for. You know, the paycheck protection program was primarily for bosses, corporation, and businesses. And this is why of the $30 billion that has been recovered so far, $8 billion has come from corporations. So it's not as like the average person has stolen all this money. It's come from the leaders in this society. I mean, which class is perpetuating this fraud the most? It's the ownership and managerial class. And it's also the class which is so esteemed in the rabidly capitalist United States. It's the small entrepreneur. But so when you have this, the whole, what I was saying back, you know, 3 years ago now, is that the West does not have the ability to do what China does, what Iran did, which is to go on lockdowns and have a army of volunteers and workers who are willing to help everybody out. In the United States, all of these chickens are coming home to roost in that there was so much incompetence and now so much fraud, and it's based on the it's caused rather by the fact that the United States, liberal democracy, hates the government, doesn't want government oversight of the rich, doesn't want programs in place to help the average person, and as a result, you have fraud, incompetence, and desperation.
Thank you very much for that, Ramin. We appreciate it. From Chicago, Ramin Mazari. Thank you. Moving on, Ukraine says Russia has launched missile strikes on the eastern city of Kramatorsk, killing and injuring dozens of people. According to Ukrainian authorities, a missile hit a restaurant in the city, killing at least 10 people and injuring more than 60 others. A second missile allegedly hit a village on the outskirts of Kramatorsk, leaving 5 people injured. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has slammed the attack, saying that Russia deserves, quote, defeat and a tribunal for its actions. Commenting on the overnight incident, Russia has denied striking civilian targets. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says strikes are targeting objects that are connected with military infrastructure in one way or another. Kramatorsk is considered to be a strategic city, which could help Moscow take full control of the Donetsk province. Iran's foreign minister says the West had helped former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein kill innocent civilians during his war on Iran in the 1980s. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says indisputable evidence shows that some Western governments were complicit in Saddam's crimes against Iranian people. Those governments, notably the U.S., Germany, France, and the Netherlands, provide the then-Iraqi dictator with chemical weapons. The top Iranian diplomat made the remarks during a meeting in Tehran, held on the 36th anniversary of chemical attacks on the western Iranian city of Sardasht. He said that Iran has brought a legal prosecution against the perpetrators of the crime through international courts, but some Western states have obstructed the process. The Director General of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons has also issued a video message. Fernando Arias said the attack on Sardasht is a reminder that the world must not compromise on any violation of the International Chemical Weapons Convention. And that is for World News. This will be bye for now.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Hajj pilgrimage, a wonderful opportunity to serve God. Welcome to the fifth and final program in our series, Hajj Pilgrimage, a wonderful opportunity to serve God. In this program, we discuss the Hajj pilgrimage as a symbol of Islamic civilization, and the Hajj as an Islamic society on a small scale. Please stay with us. We must view the Hajj pilgrimage correctly and have a correct understanding of the importance of this religious obligation. Hajj is a global and civilizational issue, the purpose of which is to advance the Islamic nation, the Islamic Ummah, to bring the hearts of Muslims closer together and to unite the Islamic Ummah against disbelief, oppression and arrogance. Indeed, if there was no Hajj, the Islamic nation would collapse. The Hajj is truly an international and global event. The Lord Most High has invited all people to perform the Hajj. Inviting human beings throughout history to be present in a certain place and on certain days is an indication of the important goal and countless benefits that exist in this divine call. The unity of the Islamic nation and confronting the arrogant powers are two examples of the goals of the Hajj pilgrimage. One of the numerous worldly benefits of the Hajj is that in this great gathering, Muslims demonstrate their presence and their power, and they stand up to the arrogant powers and all oppressors around the world. Some of the benefits of the Hajj are related to the hereafter. The Hajj pilgrims should purify and cleanse their hearts from all that goes against the remembrance of God, through supplication, through prayer, sincerity and worship. The international and extraterritorial view of the Hajj is another fundamental issue. The Hajj period is a great opportunity to get to know the nations and global issues. If all Muslims are aware of global issues, they can understand the enemy's real purpose
and the reason for its insistence on certain issues. Islam's opposition to geographical, racial, social, class-based, and other discriminations is part of the fundamental principles of the Hajj. The uniformity and sameness of all pilgrims from any race, history, and cultural background is one of the secrets of the Hajj. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has emphasized, the word Hajj should spread awareness in such a way that when people, especially young people of today, hear the word Hajj, it should evoke fundamental concepts in their minds, such as the formation of an Islamic civilization, Muslim unity against the oppressors, having a trans-border view, and eliminating the current disparities that exist in human societies. One of the great blessings of the Hajj pilgrimage is its role in strengthening the social fabric of the Muslim world. This great gathering plays a powerful role in cementing the Muslims of various nations to one another, and it helps to foster a set of common values and common goals. Islamic acts of worship, such as the Hajj pilgrimage, possess various secrets which help benefit the worshipper. And it also benefits the wider Islamic society. The Hajj is even more comprehensive than the other acts of worship with respect to its social components, and it shows the people that Islam is a social religion at heart. When we are faced with such reality within the teachings of the religion, we come to the conclusion that the individual is a part of his society and that he must integrate himself within society. In light of this reality, we know that it is wrong to think that worship at home is better than worship with congregation. Some people wrongly assume that if they stay in their homes for prayer, they can concentrate better and that their prayer is superior to the congregational prayer. The Islamic teachings, including such acts as the Hajj pilgrimage, show us that this is an incorrect way of thought. It is even evident in the manner used in the sentences of our prayers, that they are meant to be performed within the congregation as a whole and not individually. For example, when we look at the verses of Surah Al-Fatiha, we find that one verse states, "You alone do we worship, and to you alone do we turn for help." This verse uses the term "we," and it doesn't say "I." Another verse in the same Surah Al-Fatiha states, "Guide us to the straight path." Again, this verse uses the term "us," and this shows us that the social nature of our religion. In the light of the teachings of Islam with regards to unity and the power of the congregation, it is clear that the religion considers that the congregation is foremost in its importance. The individual is trained and educated within the heart of the congregation, and this is why many of the acts of worship in Islam are congregational, rather than individual in nature. Similarly, the spirit of the Hajj pilgrimage is also social in nature, and anything which might undermine this congregation is detested in our religion. This includes things such as spreading rumours, backbiting, slander, and cutting off relations. These are all considered to be great sins in Islam. At the same time, reconciling the believers, working with others and meeting the needs of the people are considered to be some of the most beloved actions in Islam. In conclusion, we can say that while we must focus on the outer aspects of worship, we must also focus on the spirit which drives these acts as well. The people who only focus on the outer aspects of worship are negligent with regards to their spirit and are in error. Such people will not only miss the secrets related to the spirit of worship, but they will also miss out on the various aspects of the outer realities of worship as well. The outer reality of the Hajj includes things such as Ihram, the ritual stay at Arafat and Ma'shar, the rituals of Mina, the circumambulation of the Kaaba, the Sa'i, or ritual running, and the Halq, ritual headshave, and other such things.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil fa. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing the different constituents of supplication. As we mentioned, there are three constituents for supplication. The first one is the spiritual attraction, the second is the supplicant, and the third is the Almighty Allah, that we will, God willing, discuss later on. Regarding the second constituent, which is the supplicant, we said that there are different conditions to be met if he or she is to be accounted as one of the genuine supplicants. We said that these conditions are sincerity, real invoking, and having good manners in supplication, as well as believing in the power and closeness of the Almighty Allah. Now, in the previous episode specifically, we said regarding having good manners in supplication that Allama Tabatabai has stipulated certain conditions based on the verses of the Holy Quran to be observed when practicing supplication. Regarding this verse, وَإِذْ قَالَ اللَّهُ يَا عِيسَى بْنَ مَرْيَمَ أَأَنْتَ قُلْتَ لِلنَّاسَ اتَّخِذُونِي وَأُمِّي إِلَهَيْنِ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ قال سبحانك ما يكون لي أن أقول ما ليس لي بحق إن كنت قلته فقد علمته. This verse, and when Allah will say, O Isa, son of Maryam, did you say to man, take me and my brother for two gods besides Allah? He will say, glory be to thee. It did not befit me that I should say what I had no right to say. If I had said it, you would have indeed have known it. Out of this verse, we learn a couple of points. Jesus Christ, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, started his answer by glorifying Allah. Qala subhanaka. At the very first time, before answering what he was asked, he said, subhanaka, glory be to Allah.
Glory be to thee, because he had heard something that he could not ascribe to God. His good manners forced him to glorify Allah. Of course, we should be aware that he had enjoyed divine manners, and this is what he does here. Now, the second point is that Jesus Christ did not use negative response to God's question. He did not say that he had not done it. There are two points here. Firstly, negation here is one sort of denying, which is against etiquette. And secondly, negation is used when there is a possibility for an act to occur, but we know that being a god for any of God's servants is impossible. So that's why he did not use negative response to God's question. Some people at that time ascribed the position of God to Jesus Christ. So what he denied and negated was that he had never had such a claim. He added that if people had erroneously called him God, this was their own error and he had nothing to do with it. So he said, "You would have known if I had done such a thing, O Almighty Allah." And this is not the absolute negation of this issue. Now, at the very same time, Jesus Christ had denied having the dignity of being a god. He said this was beyond him. Denying being a god is more significant than negating his claim of divinity. He said, "It did not befit me that I should say what I had no right to say." It means I did not count myself as something which is needless. And this verse teaches us to be polite when we want to talk to Lord. A servant should observe all these different etiquettes, all these sides of servitude. And by the way, one of the advantages of establishment of the school of supplication is that a God servant has to learn how to behave before Almighty Allah.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim, He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad, He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So as you can see, dear listeners, there are different verses in the Holy Quran teaching us the different etiquettes for supplication. Regarding Jesus Christ, we said that he left the issue to be cared for by the Almighty Allah. And then he said, if I had done this, you would have known it. This is because of the fact that God's knowledge is not like ours. It is not incomplete. Whatever is in the whole creation is within his knowledge. So Jesus Christ did not completely deny what his Lord said. And this is not actually, his words do not actually show the absolute negation of the issue. Now, let us have another look at yet another verse of the Holy Quran. When Adam ate from the forbidden tree's fruit and was addressed by أَلَمْ أَنْهَاكُمَا عَنْ تِلْكُمَ الشَّجَرَةِ Did I not forbid you both from that tree? He and his wife began to invoke Allah by saying, رَبَّنَا ظَلَمْنَا أَنْفُسَنَا وَإِن لَمْ تَغْفِرْ لَنَا وَتَرْحَمْنَا لَنَكُونَنَّ مِنَ الْخَاسِرِينَ Our Lord, we have been unjust to ourselves, and if thou forgive us not and have not mercy on us, we shall certainly be of the losers. Adam, in this verse, ascribes to himself injustice, defection, and loss, but at the same time he ascribes benevolence, good, and salvage to the Almighty Allah. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت القران با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 كتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Every hegemonic currency system has its day of collapse. It is the USC itself that sets off the inevitable trend of the end of dollar dominance, which may be what many American strategists and economic pundits are worried about. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to IRNA, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has said he plans to raise the issue of de-dollarization at the next gathering of the BRICS group of emerging economies. The Brazilian president said during the Paris summit on a new global financial pact, "Why Brazil and Argentina would have to trade in dollars? Why don't we do it in our own currencies? Why can't Brazil and China trade in their currencies? The question of why I need to buy dollars is on my agenda." Leaders of the BRICS group, comprising Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, are due to hold a summit in Johannesburg in August. Lula had previously called on developing countries to replace the US dollar with their own currencies in international trade, a push backed by China, Iran, Turkey, Iraq, and others. He said in April, while addressing the New Development Bank of Shanghai, "Why can't a bank like that of the BRICS have a currency to finance trade relations between Brazil and China, between Brazil and other countries?" The Brazilian president has been vocal about countries ditching the US dollar in global trade and using their national currencies instead. He has also expressed support for the creation of a common BRICS currency, a topic that is expected to be discussed at the Economic Bloc's upcoming Leaders Summit. Press TV had earlier noted Argentine President Alberto Fernandez and his Brazilian counterpart Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva have vowed to devise a mechanism to use their local currencies in bilateral trade amid a growing trend of dumping the US dollar in trade deals by many countries. The left-leaning leaders of the two main Mercosur Southern Common Market partners met recently in the Brazilian capital to explore ways to boost trade and dump the US dollar. Lula said alongside Fernandez spoke to the press, "The meeting was long, difficult, and we will carry out many more meetings. I made a commitment to my friend Alberto Fernandez that I will do every and any sacrifice so we can help Argentina in this difficult moment. They have made the decision to help make sure that Brazilian companies continue exporting to Argentina, and they had asked us to do some homework, which we have already done and have to do with the necessary guarantees." The proposed plan involves a line of credit to finance Brazilian companies that export to Argentina with the intention of avoiding use of the dollar, said Brazil's Deputy Minister of Economy, Gabriel Gallipolo. Gallipolo declared that his government proposed the creation of a special line of financing for Brazilian companies exporting to Argentina using local currencies, and thus maintain the flow of bilateral trade between the two Latin American economic heavyweights. The official further explained in an interview with the local Globo News Network that the use of the U.S. dollar for trade had caused the country to lose billions. Gallipolo underlined, in the last 5 years, due to Brazil's lack of mechanisms to finance its exports and Argentine imports, we have lost approximately $6 billion of space in the trade balance with Argentina to China, which has been providing financing mechanisms in alternative means of payment such as swaps or giving credit to the exporter. Responsible statecraft had this title, writing, "De-dollarization is here, like it or not." According to Responsible Statecraft, a major driver is Washington's weaponization of its currency via sanctions, covering 29% of the global economy. De-dollarization appears to be an unstoppable trend as countries around the world look to reduce their dependence on U.S. currency. Countries, particularly those in the global south, are reducing their U.S. dollar reserves, settling cross-border transactions in non-dollar currencies, and exploring the formation of new multilateral settlement mechanisms. A major driver of this trend is Washington's weaponization of the dollar via expansive sanctions that currently cover 29% of the global economy and 40% of global oil reserves. In this regard, Business Insider noted, the U.S. dollar has been the world's reserve currency since the Second World War, playing an outsized role in the world's trade. But countries globally are now lining up backup currencies for trade, as sanctions against Russia have led to some prominent world leaders and business figures sounding a warning over the power Washington wields. Even President Emmanuel Macron of France, a key U.S. ally, warned against the extraterritoriality of the U.S. dollar, suggesting in an April interview with Politico that Europe should cut its dependence on the greenback. Europe won't have the time nor the resources to finance our strategic autonomy, and we will become vassals should tensions between U.S. and China heat up, Macron told Politico. Amid these dire tidings, the Chinese yuan is seizing the opportunity and is mounting a challenge to the dollar's dominance. The use of the yuan overtook the use of dollar in Chinese cross-border transactions for the first time in March, according to an April 26 research report by Bloomberg Intelligence. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen acknowledged as much, telling CNN in April, "There is a risk when we use financial sanctions that are linked to the role of the dollar that over time it could undermine the hegemony of the dollar." Yellen said, "It is a very effective tool, of course. It does create a desire on the part of China, of Russia, of Iran to find an alternative."
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.